Buglers, we are live from Leicester Square Theatre on the 16th of September with Chris Addison and Alice Fraser. It might be our only London date of the year, so get your tickets now. Oh, get them at thebuglepodcast.com. That bit's important.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
This is a podcast from The Bugle.
Hello, welcome to Catharsis. I'm Tiff Stevenson, full-time comedian, part-time massively unqualified therapist. For this podcast only, each week I talk to a guest about small things that irritate them or pet peeves, also old wounds that maybe need a little bit of healing. We dive into a topical gripe and a historical beef to see if we can provide some insight, but mainly some catharsis. You can sweat the small stuff with me. This week I am joined by comedian, author and success story Sarah Pascoe. Very excited to be joined by Sarah. And before we get into her gripes, I just want to have a little gripe of my own. And that is the assumption from people, and online, this could be a very online thing, that good looking or hot people have good ethics and good takes. I'm seeing this a lot at the moment. See, I've known for a long time that good looking doesn't necessarily mean good morals. Like, a lot of the hot 90s dudes that I fancy turned out to be Trump voters, like Antonio Sabato Jr., Scott Bio, Dean Cain, Superman. Superman is like a Trump guy, and the Calvin Klein underpants model. And now Twitter seems to be swarming with like hot girls in bikini pics saying outrageous stuff. What is with that? Why are people thinking that good looking equals moral?
It's always happened. What's really annoying is, like, even with juries, they let, like, good-looking murderers off and stuff like that. I think it's basic evolution, and it's like a miswiring thing that we're like, I like looking at that person, so I think I like listening to that person, or yes, I would trust them to look after my dog. And, yeah, you're very wrong.
Eve Babbitts talks about beauty privilege in Eve's Hollywood, and it's great. What she says is, the possessors of beauty are reticent about their privileges or act as though it was luck that the cop didn't give them a ticket, or that it was a nice man who let them through customs without having to wait in line. Beauty, unlike money, seems unable to focus on the source of the power. Even talent knows they are special and why they're invited.
Amazing. I went to university with a very beautiful woman called Rachel, and we were telling her once that, you know, people aren't nice in shops. They're nice to you because you're stunning. Because she just went around the world and thought everyone was lovely because people lit up. Like, yes. Hello, how can I help you? What do you need? How's your day? And so I think if you're less attractive, it probably does relate to your grumpiness level, because people aren't pleased to see you and they don't care that you're there, that you're just another lump, you know.
And so, yeah, a flesh lump has come in just here.
Oh, it's another potato face. And then and so that's it. You can't judge your privilege because you're always seeing how people respond to you. You know that 30 Rock episode where John Hamm, Tina Fey, is trying to show John Hamm like, so he's like a tennis coach, you can't play tennis. And then people's like, do you do lessons? Because yeah, and I think this is the thing about privilege, though. All privileges are quite hard if that's the only thing you've experienced. And you do have to be open to, like, oh, okay, I have to gauge it. And so beautiful people, we do need to take them down a peg or two.
Yeah, yeah. And look, I think we're attractive people, but we know when we see otherworldly. It's almost like an alien life form of beauty that exists in the world that is, yeah, like, ethereal and yeah. So we just, they need to know, Good looking doesn't equal good opinions. Thank you, Sarah. This is the section of the podcast we like to call Old Grudges, which is one of your personal gripes, someone from the past. It could be childhood, it could be school, it could be a work situation where you felt like it didn't go down the way you wanted it to and you're holding on to some residual annoyance about it. So tell me.
Right, okay. So this isn't a person and it is historical, but it's also ongoing. And this is, you know, when you have like wasted emotion, the anger I feel about this thing on a daily basis and the way I'm haunted by previous times it has happened is toxic in my life.
Right, okay.
Because I am irritated about how irritated I am. But my my grievance here is with the neediness of corporations and companies and shops who email me wanting my time, my feedback. They want me to do a quiz for them. I unsubscribing from lists that then send you an email going, sorry to see you go, when the thing I just said was, don't ever send me an email ever again. Tick a box, explain why. I don't have time. The fact that the audacity, they go, oh, if you ever want to come back, stop emailing me. And so yeah, certain companies annoy me. There's one that several years ago, I bought my dog. I think it was in lockdown. You know, it's a lonely time. I bought him a fish.
Oh, I've got one of those.
Yeah, like the flappy fish.
Yes.
Right. And this company emailed me so much. They're like, oh, you've got your fish. How's it going? It's like, I've got a life. I'm not going to email you like, yeah, he likes it. He played with it twice. And then they did an email which was like, hi, I'm Derek, the CEO of Floppy Fish. I was like, don't brag about your work. And why are you emailing me? And then how did we do? How did we do?
We're not on first name terms, Derek.
Yeah. But then, yeah, companies who say, how did we do? When you bought something from them and now I've got to spend my time going, yeah, it came, I'm wearing it. Leave me alone now.
It costs £15. You don't get to have a month of my...
No,
I feel...
we're not pen pals because I got a T-shirt, Marks & Spencer's. Leave me alone.
I feel this so viscerally because I've had to, in shops now, when they go, should we email you the receipt?
Yeah.
And I'm like, please don't email it to me because I just can't get my work emails.
Yeah.
I can't see anything that I actually need to attend to because I'm flooded.
Yeah.
Also, someone, because I had a place in America a couple of years ago, someone has managed to get my email address there and is using it to subscribe to everything.
Yeah.
So I'm just being spammed relentlessly now.
Yeah. Are you on Google Mail?
Yeah.
Because I think Google Mail is allowing people in America to have the same email address. Because I've got someone, but I know who she is because sometimes I get sent her shifts.
Right.
So she's an exercise instructor. And sometimes I'll be like, your class starts in 35 minutes. But the same thing, like I knew when she had her car done because I got the email to say like what it had cost for her to fix her car. So I think Gmail is doing something where they let people have a dot or something, which means that sometimes then you get someone else's emails.
I get that. I don't think mine can be because all of mine say, and I'm genuinely serious, Dear Lashunda.
Wow.
So that it's definitely not.
That's not like a weird spelling, Tiffany. Yeah. All right. Okay. So someone's
unless Tiffany's her middle name, which could be the case, she's Lashunda Stevenson. Mm. So it might be that. So she might have done it in her first name.
Yeah.
So that could be.
Maybe she changed her first name when she got married.
Yes.
So Tiffany's her maiden first name.
Okay, I just get them relentlessly, and it's stuff like your loan's been approved. It's so spammy, and I'm like, I don't know what to do about this. But I feel that. I feel like the chumminess of corporations, you know, the idea as well, I suppose, that to expand this a bit further, that they sort of jump on causes and stuff, and it sort of feels mad.
But that's the other thing, because they have your email address, attaching it to certain things. Obviously, there's big ones like Valentine's Day or like Mother's Day and Father's Day, and sometimes it's very inappropriate for people, but then it's just like, everything. It's like today's secretary week. Yeah. Yeah. Or things that are really political, like Black History Month, which is, you know, hugely serious and weighty. And like, you can get two for the price of one at Papa John's.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. It feels, I think Marks and Spencer's maybe had the sense to go, actually, if Mother's Day is difficult for
you, you
can opt out because we are going to send a bunch of... So at least they gave you forewarning. But the chances are that you're going to see that forewarning.
But then it's another
it's
email.
Admin.
That's still what I mean. And then, you go, just take me off the system. That's what I think.
I feel bad when I email people who've opted into my mailing list.
Yeah, yeah, and you can understand what it's like. It's the wrong day. That was the wrong tone. Shut up. You know, like people used to, when I was growing up, put a little sign by the door going, no leaflets, because you get so many leaflets advertising through the door. That's what I feel like with emails, is you should be able to say, no, I don't want any. Yeah. I don't want to wake up and go, oh, I've got 17 emails. Maybe someone's offered me a job. Nope. It's just loads of feedback requests and spam.
That's exactly what it is. Like email used to be the sort of hopeful place for job offers.
Yeah.
And now it is just, oh, God.
Yeah.
What is this?
Yeah.
We've sent you, I have one from the car company, like, we've sent you your statement.
Yeah.
For this month. And then it's like, how did we do at sending you your statement? Yeah. So we've sent you the admin and the paperwork now, exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so annoying. How do we fix it? It should be like illegal for them to send. I know they changed all of this recently, like the Data Protection Act and stuff like that was recently updated. But it should be like against the rules to like send emails every day.
I think you should be able to register with stuff how stressed you are. Like you should be able to put in, here's my cortisol level. Don't bother me. Don't bother me because I feel overwhelmed already. And then there's other days, you know, if I've meditated, yeah, fine. And I'll just delete the email.
Yeah.
But because that's what I think it's related to. It's the, of course I haven't got time to fill out your bloody quiz about what I thought of the vest or the car journey. Like, that's the problem. I'm already teetering on the edge of not coping.
Yeah.
So don't give me more, don't add to my things to do list.
Yeah, don't push me into rage because I'm immediately moved. That's the straw that broke the camel's back. I was already stressed out and now you want something from me.
And that's what's annoying about it is when the straw that broke the camel's back is Mr. Floppy Fish, the CEO, Derek, sending me a message. Because that's not the correct amount of emotion. It's like, that shouldn't be making me sob. And I try to write stand-up about it and I realise, you know, there's certain topics that are so hacky or they feel like they've been done to death, even if they haven't. But like saying to the audience, hey, don't you hate it when a company emails you after you've said you don't want any more emails? And people are like, yeah, but I can't get emotional about it. It's like, okay, I had too much emotion.
If you're a company or a small business or whatever, you know, and we buy your product and stuff, we're more likely to buy again if you don't harass us.
Yeah.
If you're a bit chill, that we sort of vote with our wallets on that. Because you go, I'm not going to buy from there again if they relentlessly...
No, don't want to go down memory lane. Trousers I once bought. Yeah.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Topical cream. This section of the podcast, we attempt to apply some balm to a stingy news story that's got you all het up. It doesn't have to be something this week. It could be something in the last 6 months. What's going on that's got you raging?
Well, Chelsea Handler, professional comedian, did a very funny video about like a day in the life of a childless woman. It was just very tongue-in-cheek. It was like getting up at six, remember you don't have any kids to take to school, taking an edible, masturbating, going back to bed. She can time travel because she's so light with so little responsibilities. Like, it's all jokes is what you'd expect from a comic. And it's not facetious. I don't think it in any way attacks parents, mothers of any variety. It's quite silly, making fun of the fact, you know, you have time. You have time, the most incredible, precious resource in the world. And these hosts, now I'm obviously not American, so I don't watch a lot of right-wing American shows, but they're male right-wing show hosts, have come out sort of with this vitriol against her and have been so insulting, like saying that she looks miserable. And saying, like, this trying too hard to convince her she doesn't want kids, which is not the tone of the thing at all. I understand that, you know, you could be defensive about something. It isn't a defensive sketch. And then basically saying stuff about her withered old womb and just, like, really And it's nasty because they think they're being nasty to her. But what I hear is, I mean, it's very misogynistic to older women in general. And then to older women who've had the audacity to say, I'm happy without having children. Because they've just said, basically what they all say is, you're not.
Yeah.
Because you're not fulfilling what a woman's duty is.
Yeah.
And
that very basic essentialism that says that that's the only reason that women are here.
And it's really annoying when you watch someone who's making a joke be misinterpreted intentionally. I mean, they're intelligent men, I say. They know it's a joke. They're choosing to take it literally to say things to their...
And how would you like it if we did that with everything that you say?
Yes, exactly.
In an attempt to be funny.
Or in an attempt to enrage, because the hosts aren't attempting to be funny. They are just attacking. They're attacking her. And so, and that the debate of, and it shouldn't be a debate, but women or adults having to be defensive about their life choices regarding children, and that, and if they're in the public eye, that being a public discussion, that what your decision was and that you're fine or happy, etc. It's just really icky, really icky.
Yeah, and it kind of speaks to, so there's a few things here. There's the right from a man somewhere to think that he has any kind of sway or knows a woman's mind better than the woman in question.
Yeah.
And she's never said, she's never on stage, I think she's always openly in her stand-up talked about not wanting kids. Mm. She might have even done this out of a slightly, I'm making it very funny, but like, why do I have to justify it? It's that kind of thing of like, childless versus child free.
Yes, yeah.
Like the language that we use around it. That's, you know, a few years ago there was a pushback to kind of go, can we say child free? Because childless sounds like the default is you should be having them and you didn't manage to do that. Yeah, you're lacking. You're without. Sometimes a woman who just knows her own mind doesn't. I found this to be the case with like certain men that knows her own mind, that doesn't want you to find her attractive and doesn't want to fuck you. That's like the scariest thing for some men.
Yeah.
Like a woman who doesn't care.
Yeah.
Do you, I don't care though. I don't care that you think I'm old. I don't care that you think I'm barren. I don't care that you find me attractive. I don't care. And they're like, no, you have to care.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, how do we have the power? If you don't care about this stuff, how do we have the power? And that is terrifying to some men. Like the idea that, like, if you want to have kids, that's great. That's your sort of personal choice.
That's what I think, that's what upsets me about it, is that because that's such a personal thing and for many people such a sensitive thing, these men sort of coming in with those clog shoes, they think they're attacking one person, but actually they're pressing down on something that's already culturally been too far the other way. We haven't had enough space to talk about people who choose not to have children or not having children and the benefits and the enjoyability of life, which isn't attacking people who've chosen to have them, even though children are, you know, destroying the planet because it's more humans.
I'm an environmentally conscious stepmother.
But I did have a child, but he's not going to school. He's going to carbon offset himself. He's planting trees until he's 16.
So it is when it's men talking about it as well, I think men having no understanding of like I remember Sarah Silverman saying this, particularly when it's around female comics, I always sort of feel this. Obviously, we feel it on a very visceral level because we're in a job where we have to travel. And I do think as well, lots of people are just generally, I saw a tweet the other day going, is anyone in their 30s having kids? I feel like no one is because we can't afford them. And it's expensive to have kids. And it's even harder if you're in a job where you're self-employed and you don't know where the income's coming in or none of it's guaranteed.
Or it's actively going to lose you the ability to work. So that, and that's the thing with your self-employed, for a portion of time you won't be able to work, which means you're definitely going to lose income.
And so you need someone, let alone if you are, lots of us have partners who are also in the same industry and we're all just sort of self-employed. So it's always going to be a risk. It's always a bit of a dance as to how that's going to work. But I remember Sarah Silverman saying a great thing years ago of like, listen, I see lots of male comics specifically in their 40s and 50s just having kids and then just carrying on, or even in their 30s, you know. And she was like, I would love to do that, but I can't. It's impossible for me to be able to go out on the road, like, you know, be fun Bobby is the description that she sort of used. Like, fun dad, you know, and I'm here and I'm not here. And she was like, women don't sort of have that option.
It's such a weird thing, but, and I didn't realise it till I had a child. As in, it wasn't something I was aware of. But if you are in a heterosexual couple and you're the man who goes out to work, whether you're working in the day or the night, like we do, and you're leaving your child with your with their mum, you are so free because they are with the safest person that they love most in the world. You're liberated. When you are that person leaving to go to work, you are always leaving them with someone who's not as good as looking after them as you are.
Yeah.
And there's either the dangers of stranger or family or people not doing things the way that you would do them. So you don't have that peace of mind.
Yes.
You take the worry with you, even sometimes when they're with their dad, and even if they're a brilliant dad, you don't have that like, woohoo, I'm free, I don't have to worry. They're with mummy, because you're mummy.
Yes, yeah, exactly, yeah. It's still not in the narrative how, like, many more blended families there are, for example, you know, or non-bio is the term which makes me sound like a washing powder. Yeah. I don't enjoy that.
Yes.
But, you know, like, how families are sort of different now. So the idea, it feels like it's harking back to we can't control the women if the women make their own decisions about their bodies.
If they have freedom.
But do you know what? That control doesn't stop with someone having a baby. So the idea that there's this judgment and there's all this conversation around Chelsea Handler because she's not choosing to have, because she's choosing not to have kids. The idea that if she had them, that the judgment and the discussion would stop. It doesn't. And that is, then pregnant women get unsolicited advice by the, you know, the famously in my show a couple of years ago, I witnessed like womb bothering in a Starbucks where a guy wouldn't serve a woman a coffee when she was pregnant, you know. And I was like, this is some 20 something barista in it that thinks he knows better than this woman who's pregnant. My sister-in-law's pregnant at the moment. She was like, oh, people are like, you need to do this, you need to do that. And she's like, it's not my first one. And I was like, even if it was your first one, you know your own body. So the judgment and the discussion doesn't stop. Then it's a, are you breastfeeding? Are you not breastfeeding? Yeah. We're going to tell you what you should be doing with your pregnant body, even though it's not us in it.
Yeah.
That's for men and women as well.
But I also think that links back to why certain people would be affronted by a woman finding joy in the space she has from not having children. It's like, oh, so we don't have collective ownership over your body. You've said, my body's mine. I do whatever I want with it. And the exact opposite happens. It's a common experience that when you are pregnant or trying to conceive or then having a baby, that's suddenly collective. We all get input.
Yes, we all get to have a say.
It's my turn to have my feedback. Okay, so you're not doing enough yoga. And
My cousin said this brilliant thing, which was very freeing to me a few years ago. She was like, and she has two kids. My cousin Jane, she's like 10 years older than me. She's very wise. And she sort of said, listen, if you have them, it will be amazing. If you don't have them, it will also be amazing. Mm. Your life will be amazing. And that's just a really sort of freeing thing to hear, to kind of go, you can choose to have a beautiful life.
Yeah.
No matter which way you do it.
Yeah. I think for such a long time, I mean, and also I think it can be relatives, not even like society as a whole, but just older relatives, you know, you'll miss out. You'll never know love like it. Like this sort of fear of missing out thing, it's so important to have the balance of, you may lack for absolutely nothing. Like enrichment of life is lots and lots of different paths. And I guess that does sort of, that is disruptive to the status quo, because it isn't like you must do this. It's like you have so many options open to you now. That's how young women should feel.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. Unpopular opinions. We all have them. So, Sarah, I'd like you to tell me something that you love that everyone else hates, or vice versa. Mm.
Right. I think this is going to make me unpopular, and I have to swallow what I want to respond. And Tiff, I don't know if you're going to agree with me or not on this. I hate it on Instagram when people ask where I got my clothes.
Right.
I hate it. I hate it because they often don't read the situation that you're posting about. Yeah, sometimes Instagram is someone going, I'm going out tonight. You know, the Comedy Awards was recently. My whole feed was people going at the Comedy Awards today. And I feel like if someone's put a picture of them up in their outfit, they might have tagged their dress because You don't want people to ask you. Sometimes you tag things that people still ask you. So that's a subsection of my hatred for this, is they don't even know to click on the photo. But if you wear something on TV, they just message you. And especially if you've done something with lots of episodes, you know, Mock the Week.
Yeah.
Where's your shirt from Mock the Week? Okay, number one, I've not been on that show for 8 years, so you're watching a repeat on day. And you're going to have to narrow it down for me. And also, you definitely can't get it.
You can't get it anymore.
It was either from, like, New Look 12 years ago, or secondhand, or, yeah, you just can't get it. And why should I tell you? Stop copying me. That's what I have. I have this real, like, school reaction, like, don't get the same top as me. Like, I got that top because, like, I wanted to look different from other people, not the same. But there's, sometimes with Instagram, there's a real deafness. Like, my friend Carrie Ed works in grief, and she was posting about something. It was an anniversary of a loved one dying. And so it was a post about how some years, you know, it's massive, you see it coming, and then the day itself is fine. And other times it sort of creeps up on you and surprises you. And then some years you have this surprisingly good year, and then sometimes. Anyway, so it was a post about, it was really sharing how it feels years on from losing someone, how she felt that day. And the first comment was, where'd you get your top from? And the second the second one was, I love your bedroom wallpaper. Where's your bedroom wallpaper from? And I thought, this is my problem with it, is it treats people like shops. And sometimes people are shops. Sometimes people are trying to get free stuff, especially what we do. Sometimes people are like, have borrowed a dress, recommend this company. My friend is making jewellery. But then there's this expectation that the rest of the time it's like, where did you get it? Where did you get it? Where did you get it? And it's like, And so I have all of these. This is why I think it makes me popular. Sometimes I don't want to tell people because it's expensive. So their reaction is, they're £600. Yeah, sorry, that's why I wasn't going to get my Miu Miu shoes. That's why I'm not an advert for designer stuff. Sometimes mummy gets a treat, okay? And so you don't want to say, like, and then other times it's because it is secondhand or someone lent it to you, or. And you don't want to have to, again, it's the admin, it's like the other email saying, I don't want to be on my phone all the time. I especially don't want to be on Instagram all the time. Going Topshop, 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 advertising a bad shop, you know. Or, and then that's the other thing. You get, so if you do tag something, then what you get is, oh, did you know, they're ethical, and that means they're expensive, or they're not ethical, which means that they're affordable, which means that other people will then say, and also then, that's the whole thing with, like, you know, we talk about fast fashion, fashion in general. If Instagram is a shop and everyone, you're allowed to go, where'd you get your tights from? Where are your shoes from? Where's your wallpaper from? You're just encouraging more commercialism. You're encouraging people to shop more, which is what we're not supposed to be doing, what we're all aware of.
Yes.
Yeah.
Trying to, so I tag things quite a lot for that reason. Yeah. And even when I tag it, then people still ask me.
Yeah. And that makes me want to go fuck yourself, Susan. Like, do you know what? The fact that I've had to waste three, and again, it's my cortisol's too high. I've had to waste 3 seconds of my day reading your stupid comment. I don't want to be on Instagram. I definitely don't want to be explaining to you what tagging is.
There is a thing of, like, reading the room, but I feel like a lot of people on Instagram can't read the room. But
they aren't reading anything because it's pictures. And I guess that's why I think it might be, I keep telling myself that you only, the internet makes you hate people because you only see the worst of people. So yes, someone's not reading what the post is about and going, should I ask where the top's from? They're just going, oh, I like that top. And also sometimes they're not actually going to go out and get that top. They're just interested. Oh, where's that shop? What's that?
Yeah.
What's
that? I do love fashion, and I do sometimes, I don't think I've done it on people's posts of, like, where's that from? It's really hard to control how people respond to that. Like, I had a panic attack the other day, I think at your show, because Aisling was like, oh, I love that coatie, like, where's that from? And I was like, you like secondhand stuff, it's not, it's from Golden Goose. It was stupid money, like you say. I think I'd done a corporate, or actually no, tell a lie, Paul had bought it for me for my, but my husband had bought it for me for my birthday, like an early birthday present. So I was like, I that is one of the reasons why you sometimes don't tag a thing, or someone will go, I love that, you know, bag or whatever. And it is the odd thing that you've got, that you go, this is my designer piece, but I've also got stuff from charity shops and I also mix stuff up from. Yeah.
And also the reason me having this isn't to make you feel bad that you haven't got it. And none of this would have started if you hadn't asked where it was from. Because like, actually, in a way, I'm like, this is your fault. I didn't say, go back through my Instagram, find my 40th birthday party and ask me where that dress is from.
Yeah.
Because you're going to be annoyed. That's the thing when I've worn stuff on TV, what people want to know is, I can get it now and it's less than 50 quid.
Right.
That's what they want from people, to have stuff on TV. They yes. don't.
Essentially, you're going, is it from Zara or Mango? Yes.
Yeah. Can I go onto eBay, put in Zara cat shirt and find it?
Yes. A general Instagram thing that is for ages is that what Instagram has a lot of people doing is like activism and narcissism at the same time. So this is where like, so someone like not getting the tone of a post is because Instagram is also full of people going, here's a naked picture of me for gun control.
Yeah.
Like you're like,
or dance, or here's dancing, me. wiggling, pointing, going, always look before you cross the road.
Yes.
It's like, you just wanted to show what a nice bum you have. It's fine, just say it.
And that's what I don't mind. I like, one of my things is like, by all means, you know, like it was like Kim Kardashian did a naked selfie on International Women's Day. It was like, happy International Women's Day, ladies. I have nothing to wear. And everyone was like, oh God.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to do the nude selfie, just do it. Just don't link it to a thing that has worth when it's for your own personal gain.
That's what's so weird about the dead fish on the women that they do every year to make us realize that the seas are being overfished.
And is it naked women with dead fish?
Their bits are covered with dead fish. Do you see this every year? The Evening Standard always has it like front page. Helena Bonham Carter, she's got like a carp on her tits, and it's always like, because that's what makes you look and interact. It's like, I don't think a single fish was saved. It looks like six fish were murdered, actually, and draped across some very respectable, talented women who I would actually listen to when they're wearing clothes.
Yes, yeah, I don't need to see a muff halibut.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Well, also, and I remember, like, because it was sort of, again, with the International Women's Day thing, I suppose there was this kind of, like, loose link to feminism, and I'm like, if you have to ask yourself if it's feminist, just look around and see if the men are doing it.
Yeah.
Because they're not getting their arseholes out for Greenpeace.
No.
Maybe we need to see more testicles.
Not even at Movember. And that would be quite fitting, you know. Yes. Get a prostate exam. Here's my delicious waxed anus.
Well, thank you for your unpopular opinion. I agree with it.
Oh, thank you.
In part.
Yes.
Thank you for sharing that. I hope you feel better for getting it off your chest.
Yeah.
This is the section of the podcast we call Oryx, which was a prehistoric cattle. So it was a way of saying historic beef, Sarah.
Ah.
You know, we thought we were being very clever, and then everyone goes, what's Oryx?
Oryx.
So this is the historical beef section. And this is where I bring a story. Sometimes it's a rivalry, sometimes it's a feud, and we sort of unpack it a bit. And this is about a magic trick. So this is an argument over the sawing a girl in half illusion.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1921, magicians Horace Goldin and P.T. Selbit were locked in a legal battle over who owned the rights to perform sawing a girl in half illusion. Though each magician performed a different version of the trick, both were determined to prevent the other from using such a wildly successful illusion. In Selbit's version, the girl was completely enclosed inside the box. So you didn't know there was a girl inside the box, which was cut in two parts. Goldin's version saw the feet and the head, which is the version that most of
That's
us...
That's a better version, to
yes.
be fair.
Yeah.
I would let, if I was the other guy, I'd let the shit guy carry on.
Yeah. I'm doing head and feet. Everyone wants to see the head and feet.
The head and feet prove that she's not dead from the sawing.
Yes.
If she's just in the box, you could have just murdered someone.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Legal wrangling between two magicians went on for several years, but it really made no difference. By late 1921, dozens of magicians were performing their own versions of the trick. In fact, Thayer Manufacturing was marketing the blueprints for its version of the sawing illusion. Ironically, in 1921, Alexander printed these blueprints in his book, The Life and Mysteries of the Celebrated Dr. Q, making for a lively feud between Floyd Thayer and Alexander. In mid-1921, Charles Carter approached Horace Goldin and offered him $500 for the right to perform the illusion in the Carter Show. Goldin refused. Carter put it in his show anyway. Later, a letter to magician Will Goldston, Goldin said, Carter offered to buy the sawing in half. When I refused to sell it, he pinched it. Now, what I think's interesting about this, and I guess we can look at it in terms of creativity and art broadly, is the idea of ownership, like someone truly owning an idea.
IP,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, the old intellectual property. Now, I used to live with a magician, and this happens quite frequently in the magic world. There are just shared tricks, there's shared illusions, and I guess it's how the trick is done which differentiates each individual magician, but also shared like patter and jokes, which sometimes might have come from comics.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. But when you think about music hall, you would have had songs that lots of people, it would have been about how you performed a song. You didn't expect anyone to have written it. And then, and yeah, the same with jokes, routines, that used to be, it's only now that we think, oh, stealing a joke is a really low thing to do. It used to be very collective.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would be the story and the version of, so the Aristocrats is a perfect example of that, isn't it? That everyone has this version of a very grotesque story, and then at the end they're supposed to be classy people, they're the aristocrats. I wonder if it's different with a magic trick, because you do have to actually make the apparatus. So whether someone's seen that and gone, there's an idea, I can make that better. So the head and feet guy has gone, perfected the idea. And you can see that in stand-up quite a lot. You can see someone's gone an idea and then someone's taken that and expanded it and made it greater, or a concept.
It's always tempting to do. I don't know if you ever gig with very, very new people.
Right. But what, when you see them badly.
People just quite often go, fuck, that's a good idea. That is a good idea. Wasted on someone who's been doing stand-up 6 months. and obviously, you can't just go home and go, right,
I'll do the version of this.
Yeah, I'll do the head and feet version. But you do sometimes go, oh, what an idea.
I'm doing the head and feet of you, of some open spots.
Because that's not how, and it would, if that had happened vice versa, when we were new, we wouldn't have gone, oh yeah, that's what happens.
Well, it did. Mm. I think it did. Like, I definitely had a couple of bits that I were like, were very key to, and then I heard someone doing versions of them early you know, just like jokes that I was like, no one sort of, I remember hearing like my well-read joke go round Radio 4 by like, by men as well, you know, and maybe lots of other people would come up with it. But I remember doing my well-read joke and people going, oh my God, that's such a good gag. Mm. Like no one's, and it was very much, oh, that's my joke, you know, but if you're not known enough, someone can kind of change it and make it a bit different. Or, I mean, I do it with my own stuff. I have, over the last few years, definitely gone back and looked through routines that I've done, you know, even in early Edinburgh shows or just early bits of stand-up, where I was like, I didn't have the skill to make that what I can make it now.
Yeah,
I just had a good idea. I had an interesting idea like years and years ago about why we should be mean to nerds, because we don't want them happy and married and having kids, because we want technological advances.
Keep them miserable.
So, and I was recently looked at that and went, I need to rework this and put Elon Musk in it.
But what must be very frustrating if you're a magician is when you are the first person to do something, people will come to your shows because they hear of it and it's the only place they can see it. And if they've seen it three times before, you've lost the wonder of, oh, wow, I didn't know that that was possible.
Yes.
And so it must be, because with comics, at least what you can do is you go, well, jokes are jokes, and you produce lots of them all the time. You're always writing. Whereas with a trick, especially if it's that's your big closer or something, you would actively go, okay, that person copying me is taking a chunk of my money, is creating a competition for my my audience.
Yes.
And which would be so annoying if you were the person who came up with it yourself.
And actually, it's really hard to prove it, because even as I'm saying about the well-read thing, like, and I definitely did, people like, I heard your joke on the radio, and I heard maybe someone had, I've just never heard anyone do that joke. But now I'm like, someone else could have come up with it. And like, you know, what if that was the case in 2005 or six, when we first started.
There's an episode of Mock the Week where they left it in, and I think it's so fantastic. Mark Watson isn't listening, and he does the same joke as Gary Delaney after Gary Delaney does it. And it's, but it's what is the reason it's so funny is because of how they all react to it, because he'd just zoned out, and then obviously like looked down at his page and then did his joke. And it was such a good example of how comics sometimes their brains do work in the same formulaic way. I'm not saying this about your well-read joke, but it can definitely happen where different brains go, And when people talk about their joke being stolen in those contexts, you're like, I can see how the human brain put those two things together and that's the joke.
Oh, I had one on Mock the Week, and it was very frustrating for me, because I felt like, and at this point, it was, I think it was on like my second Mock the Week. I had a joke in my show. I think it was in Along Came a Spider. So I did that in Edinburgh in 2009, my first hour show in Edinburgh. And it was about meeting Richard Dawkins and giving him my Climbing Mount Improbable, like a copy of his book to sign. And the joke was, he wrote inside it, Dear Tiffany, God bless Richard. Like, so the joke was about. And then I think, so it was a joke that I had in my show, and I did it in like 2015 or something on Mock the Week on a unlikely greeting cards or something. Unlikely things a TV presenter would say. And so I said something like, I've been Richard Dawkins Goodnight and God Bless.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, you stole that joke off Holly Walsh. And I was like, what?
Oh,
like,
it's such a horrible feeling being accused. It's such I hate it so much.
And like, Holly had done like a year before, like, but I was like, I knew that I had it in my show. So I knew I hadn't. So I was like, no, but I haven't. This was in my show. Yeah. Now, whether or not I've been the first person to ever like put that in a stand-up show in 2009, but I was like, Holly did it on the show in like 2013 or 2012. And I was like, I did not steal this joke. I didn't.
When I did stand up for the week, there was a joke format that I thought was a format, right? So, and it's that I don't come to where, it's a heckle put down. I don't come to where you work and slap the dicks out of your mouth. I'd heard so many comics do it on the circuit. So it was a wedding speech. I was doing stand up about a wedding speech and it was a version of that. So it wasn't knock the dick out of your mouth and it was something to the mother-in-law. Anyway, and I got so upset because I just felt so bad. But it was like saying that that's a Jimmy Carr joke. And I realised that's probably where it originated. I might be wrong, but he was known for that. And now there's a woman now who still is so angry about it that whenever I do anything, like I'll tweet or like, oh, I'm on this show tonight, like, oh, I'm doing this thing. And she'll go, I hate what you're wearing, but at least you're doing your own material, not Jimmy Carr's words. And she's still so furious and I still feel so told off, like, because even the idea that someone thinks you looked at someone else and went, oh, I'm just going to have it for myself and it doesn't matter. Or I think I can get away with it. When obviously no one would.
I think it's very, very rare that, although I have had a comic once say to me, oh yeah, I've seen you do that. And I just absorbed it. I won't do that again. Yeah. I must have just absorbed, because I've definitely seen you do that. But I think it's very rare that someone's actively sitting down going, what can I steal? Yeah. Although I know that does happen in America. They have like court cases and stuff around it. You know, but it's more likely to have been someone like there's sometimes collective consciousness and is it different enough? And then there's maybe they saw and forgot. I would say 90% of the time or 85% of the time, it's not this nefarious, purposeful, you know, and we've all had sort of conversations where we sort of go, oh yeah, I've got a bit about that, or I've got a bit similar to that, just so
someone,
you know,
get in touch going, or at the end of a gig going, oh, I really love your set, just so you know, I've also got a thing about like that whole subject. Like, Angela Barnes and me both had a bit about Brazilian waxes that ended with a George Bush joke, and again, so it's different. Her joke was so funny, and it was about how think the same thing when I have a Brazilian wax from listening to Donald Trump. Bush wasn't that bad, right? So it was very different to my one. But essentially, so Bush is a word for thing. Like, it just,
of course, you're going to get there sometimes, and that's the hard thing about panel shows and stuff like that as well. That it's like that's not Mark going, I'm going to copy Gary, because that would be insane. Yeah. It's Mark going, I've arrived at the same joke and I'm not listening.
Yeah, I'm not listening.
Which is one of the reasons why with something like Mock the Week, I like to try and. Or what I learned later on was to try and be in it as much as I can, because otherwise, and jump on the improvisation rather than going, oh, I need to think up 40 different funny lines for a news story that's happened this week.
And then crowbar them in, regardless of what anyone just said. So like, think about post boxes.
That was a fantastic historic beef. I think it got us into an interesting place. Before we wrap up, I should ask you what you have to plug. If you have anything to plug, I know you're on tour, so tell us about it.
Yeah, I'm on tour until end of April in the UK, all over the place. Manchester, Liverpool, Southampton, places like that. And then I'm going to Australia to tour the show there. So if you've got any listeners in Australia.
Oh, yes.
Melbourne, Adelaide, Sydney, Canberra, Perth, and then New Zealand.
So go check out Sarah's website. That will have all the dates.
I have to stress, I do know New Zealand isn't in Australia.
Oh, okay.
Just in case that really bothers someone, that I'm like, all over Australia. New Zealand.
Yeah. Can you say Antipodean?
Antipodean tour.
All of that. Yeah, there we go. So check out Sarah on tour. I've been to see the show. It's very excellent. I will also be on tour from May. Check out tiffstevenson.co.uk because I've finally updated my website with tour dates. It hadn't been looked at since Brexit, so... you can get all the tour dates on there. Come find me. Thanks for listening to Catharsis.
You can listen to other programmes from The Bugle, including The Bugle, Catharsis, Tiny Revolutions, Top Stories, and The Gargle, wherever you find your podcasts.